Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Today, it's our weekly Q&A with Layla, a segment that I very much look forward to, and I hope you do as well. Today, we're fielding questions from you that you can direct to radioprogram@AOL.com, and I'm accompanied by my colleague, Layla Mutin, who's our Hoffman Center nutritionist. We work together on a daily basis. She's a registered dietitian, and she's earned a master's degree in the field of nutrition. How are you doing, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman. How are you?
Good, good. So what's happening in your world? Any noteworthy news stories or exciting patients this week?
No, not so much. It's been fairly quiet after the holiday weekend and so forth, and yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So nothing nothing earth-shaking. Yeah, there's a little bit of a sort of a midwinter lull. Mm. I managed to get away for a week in Florida, and it was nice because, although it was kind of interesting because when I left, there was only a 15-degree differential between the temperature in New York and the temperature in Florida. It was 40 degrees in New York, and it was about 55 degrees in Florida, which for them is like a real
cold
spell. When I got back, the disparity was 75 degrees.
Wow.
Because it was zero in New York, and it was 75 degrees in Florida. And so I came back. It was kind of a shock to reacclimate myself to New York, a record cold.
Wow.
Of interest this week is, you know, I continue following the Whole 30 diet, more or less. I'm really enjoying it for me personally. Of course, I violated the diet a little bit over a Super Bowl Sunday because had to have some. It was obligatory to have something to drink. So I pretty
much
adhered to the diet, even though I was on vacation. It wasn't that hard because, you know, you order a clean piece of fish or, you know, a clean piece of meat with a lot of side vegetables, and you're there in terms of diet compliance. So it actually worked out pretty well on vacation. But of interest is that I just completed a podcast, and I think there was three articles that I wrote on the Whole 30.
Yes.
And I routinely post them on Facebook, and I post them on Twitter. And I was excited to see that none other than the originator of the Whole30's diet got in touch with me and said, wow, this is great. Great review of the Whole30 diet. And so I then tweeted her back. She's Melissa Hartwig. And Melissa will be a guest on our program. I'm going to talk to her.
Wonderful.
In probably, I guess, in a week. You know, something along those lines. So look for a podcast with the originator of the Whole30 diet. And what's exciting is that a lot of people in my orb, friends and family, and even business associates, the people who work to produce this podcast, are inspired to go on a Whole30 diet. And with sometimes really astounding results.
You've made it very, very in vogue.
Yeah, you know, so it's interesting. I mean, look, it's the question is, you know, is this the right diet for everyone? In perpetuity, or is this something that you may want to devote 30 days to and experience it and see if it's beneficial? And then it becomes, wow, I feel good on that. I can't really maintain this with that degree of rigor. It's not practical, nor do I want to deprive myself. But nonetheless, it may be, you know, something that people can file away in their experiential bank when they need a healing diet or a detox or a dietary reset, or they want to shed some extra pounds. For myself, you know, I guess the biggest interest, I really wasn't interested in losing weight, but I did lose, I think, about 4 to 6 pounds on the diet, because I'm noticing that my clothing is fitting looser, and although that wasn't my goal, but nonetheless, it's, I guess, when you're running and cycling, every pound you shed, lightens your load a little bit. So, you know, I feel my athletic performance is really off the hook. It's been great. And, you know, greater degree of clarity and alertness. And one thing in particular is that it used to be, it'd take some time in the morning for me to get going. You know, as you get old, like it used to be, you know, when you're like 35, you know, you can wake up, you know, with your sneakers by the bed, jump in your sneakers and just go run outside for, you know, 5 miles. And now there's a little bit of a tune-up period, you know, where you kind of have to stretch and kind of wake up. And I've noticed that that's really cut down with this diet. So morning stiffness, morning lethargy, really reduced.
Look at that.
Yeah, so there were some subtle but tangible benefits, and you can check out my comments on the Whole30 diet at drhoffman.com if you haven't already. And, you know, give it a shot. You know, there's a lot of these 30-day challenges these days, you know, like 30 days or whatever, do 10,000 push-ups in 30 days, or 30 days, walk 5 miles every day for 30 days,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, whatever your level is.
Right.
Or 30 days, you know, do 50 push-ups every day.
30 days is the amount of time that somebody can commit to and make it sustainable.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to go beyond the 30 days if you don't want to.
Right.
And I love the point
you
make.
It's less daunting.
It's less daunting.
Right.
And I love the effect that it's had on you, because just because we're getting older doesn't mean we're going to be harder to get started in the morning and have more lethargy or aches and pains and all this stuff. It doesn't have to be like that.
So there's a comeback trail. There's so much of what people experience as they age. I mean, it's very real, and I'm realistic about it. But some of it is lethargy that's brought on by food allergies, by, you know, frankly, you know, alcohol is great, enjoyable.
While you're having it,
social,
but then...
Social, delicious, and so on. But there is a little bit of lethargy that's introduced when you consume alcohol regularly. And, you know, I didn't really notice it that much because I was, you know, for all my years of athletic performance, I've always had, you know, a drink here and there. But without alcohol, you know, a clear mind, greater productivity, which is the name of the game, because that's, you know, what it's all about. You know, this point in my career, I want to just accomplish a lot.
Can I ask you, did it change your sleep pattern at all? Did you require more sleep, less sleep? No.
Interesting.
No change?
I'm not a bad sleeper. And part of the reason for that is that, like someone who's undergone starvation, you know, when you put food in front of someone who's had a starvation experience, they're always ready to eat.
Sure.
Similarly, after years of sleep deprivation during my medical training and in medical school, I am a great sleeper, a sleeper of opportunity.
You're making up for all
I'm still making up for it, and I'm still a good sleeper. So, but I have to say that my sleep is very deep and profound on this diet. And that's actually one of the things that's reported by people who follow this diet, is that sleep quality is often improved.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly there is that potential benefit to this type of eating.
Right. And eating in such a clean manner, the removal of food allergies, as you mentioned, all of that impacts that.
Yeah.
Your sleep quality, your energy level, all of that, how you feel.
Yeah.
Overall.
I kind of delved into it extensively. Those of you who are tired of hearing me talk about it, you know, we're almost done. there's a lot of interesting resources for you at drhoffman.com on that subject. All right, let's go to our questions, please.
Okay. All right, we've got a question from Joe. Joe's emailed us. I love your show, Dr. Hoffman. Please continue to expose all the bad information out there. With all the antibiotics being used in cows, that affects the meat, the milk, is this fattening me up? And by the way, is organic a guarantee that there are no antibiotics?
And that is an excellent question.
Yeah.
And so, you know, let's look at what we're talking about here. First of all, it is agricultural practice to give animals antibiotics even when they're not sick.
Mm-hmm.
And originally, I thought they were doing that because animals are raised under unnatural conditions in sheds, in giant industrial farms, where they're in close proximity and where infection can spread like wildfire. So they have to be almost prophylaxed, treated preventively with antibiotics so they don't get sick. But actually, there's an ulterior motive. The ulterior motive is that if you give antibiotics to animals, they grow fatter.
Yes.
They increase weight, and that's really important. If you can increase the weight of the animals on a farm by 5%, think of what that means in terms of profit, because you sell meat by weight.
Right.
But it's not just the muscle meat, it's actually more the fat. And fat is actually a desirable characteristic. Marbled meat.
Sure. Adds to the tenderness.
Yes, exactly.
Of a ribeye steak or something.
Marbled steak, you know, the grass-fed tough steak, you know, people don't like that aesthetically.
Yeah.
But do you want your meat marbled? Do you want to gain weight? And studies have actually shown that children who are given antibiotics even a few times have a greater tendency towards obesity. So what seems to be happening is it's mediated via the microbiome in the gastrointestinal tract.
Yeah.
And we know that the bacteria in your intestinal tract influence your metabolism, may change your absorption of food. That's actually what happens in gastric bypasses. We actually change the microbiome, and then people lose weight.
Yeah.
It's not just malabsorption. It's the changing the microbiome by changing the structure of the gastrointestinal tract.
People also don't realize that 70% of antibiotic use in this country is in food production.
Right. Yeah.
Which
it's huge.
Yeah.
So, so what does that mean for the food that you get that's, quote, organic or grass-fed? Well, first of all, that the standards for that mm-hmm. are very variable. It's, to some extent, it's self-certified. And therefore, you know, the FDA doesn't have enough inspectors
That's true.
To do this. There are organic associations who hire inspectors to come, mm-hmm. but it's fairly easy to fake it or evade the inspections.
Yeah.
And use a little bit,
right.
if necessary. And the other thing is just the background environmental contamination.
Yes.
So let's say you never take antibiotics ever. Does that
right.
mean you have zero levels of antibiotics in your body?
No. I'm getting residue
yeah.
from the environment, maybe the
even
food.
In the water.
Exactly.
Even in the water.
Yeah.
Even in the, it's very problematic.
Yeah.
So, no. So the answer is, you know, it's harm reduction rather
right.
than total elimination. We want to minimize our exposure to these things, which damage our microbiome.
Organic is still going to be cleaner
yeah.
than the regular factory farmed animals.
No
so,
question.
Yeah.
So that, I think, is the answer.
Yeah. No, but I love that he raised that, are the antibiotics also making us fat in the commercial meat that we're eating? That's an excellent question, because when you talk about the microbiome and obesity, children, if they have a history and all of that by changing the microbiome, this is really a different way, a different approach
yep.
for the obesity in this country.
Now,
so,
conversely, have we discovered which probiotic can you give a person to make them lose weight? And they're, believe me, they're working on it. But it doesn't seem to be a matter of a single probiotic. It may be a matter of the balance, the overall balance.
Yeah.
And the best way to change the balance is not to change, to introduce a probiotic in a pill.
Mm-hmm.
It's to change your diet. Changing
yes.
your diet alters your microbiome.
Yes.
And this actually may be one of the reasons why diets like the Whole30 work.
In a short amount of time,
yeah.
even.
Even not,
just a few days, the microbiome
me, I'm
can
really
change.
Not Well, maybe I'm reducing my calories because I don't have like some of these,
You're not craving.
Foods. I'm not having like as much chocolate. I could go through enormous amounts of dark chocolate, supposedly healthy. Well, I'm not having that. That's superfluous calories.
Mm-hmm.
But believe me, I'm not starving and I'm eating a lot of food.
Mm-hmm.
And it changes your microbiome composition when
mm-hmm.
you alter the types of food you eat. You don't eat any sugar. Sugar encourages the growth of bad bacteria.
Right. Right.
And alcohol may change your microbiome.
Absolutely.
And grains absolutely change your microbiome.
Yes.
There's no question.
Yes. All right. Joe, thank you for that very thoughtful question.
Indeed.
All right. We've got a question from Judy. Judy's wondering, Dr. Hoffman, if you prefer Kyolic Garlic Reserve more than Kyolic Garlic Curcumin. I was not aware there were two different types.
Yeah, there's a lot of different versions of Kyolic. The one that we sell at drhoffman.com is the cardiovascular formula.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are other formulas that may be more appropriate for inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly curcumin may have an anti-cancer benefit.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
you know, to me, I'm not going to say that one type is better than another. They have a whole
yeah.
range of blends. But the cardiovascular formula is the one that was used in very exciting research recently that showed
yeah.
not just slowing the progression of plaque, but reversal of plaque.
Yeah.
And that was just knocked my socks off. I was very impressed with that research done at UCLA.
That's a reason for everybody to start taking it, as
oh,
far
yeah.
as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Yeah. Judy, thank you for your question. We've got a question from Jean. So far, they were all J's.
Wow.
Joe, Judy, and now.
Okay. What's up with that?
Okay, dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I've listened to your show for years. I've learned so much. Thank you. Dear friend of mine has a problem. Was prescribed Levaquin for bronchitis, and after a few days started experiencing serious palpitations while just sitting and watching television. So I was wondering, have you heard of this as a side effect of the fluoroquinolones, and is there anything she could do about it?
Yeah, there's actually some... there's some literature on cardiac arrhythmias and erythromycin, I think,
mm-hmm.
which is a different antibiotic.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's possible, but Levaquin is, in particular, concerning because it affects the connective tissue in some individuals. And it may be genetic, the individuals who are more prone to this than others.
Tendinopathy.
Achilles heel rupture, almost yeah. spontaneous rupture. You're walking down the street and you feel an excruciating pain in your Achilles heel, and you can't put your foot down because you've ruptured this critical tendon mm-hmm. that runs the back of your ankle. Recently, there was a study that showed that fluoroquinolone antibiotics are associated with a higher risk of aortic aneurysm because that's connective tissue too.
Wow.
Now, so that's a cardiovascular problem, but it's very different than an arrhythmia. There are also many patients who are what we call floxed. That's an abbreviation for FQ syndrome. These drugs are called floxins. And uh-huh. these people have devastating symptoms. They have chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia. They're just knocked out in a variety of mysterious ways.
From the fluoroquinolones?
From fluoroquinolone use alone, yes.
Very scary.
Yeah, it's totally scary. I really think those drugs should be the very, very last resort because it's like Russian roulette. You don't know if you're going to get floxed.
So there are other antibiotics that could have treated her bronchitis
yes, although the tendency is for doctors to use the latest, greatest, most expensive, most powerful antibiotic rather than be conservative. And use an older, more tried and true antibiotic.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is. Because, hey, if you've got a choice between a BB gun and a howitzer, what are you going to use?
Mm.
Right?
Wow. Yeah.
That's the principle of medicine. Is use strong medicine. But sometimes stronger medicine, newer medicine, isn't better medicine.
Mm-hmm. Wow, Gene, we hope your friend feels better. Wow. Anything to do about the arrhythmia?
Well, what do we do about arrhythmias?
Or the palpitations.
Yeah.
Palpitation
Actually,
is what it is.
There is some evidence that you can that individuals who have magnesium deficiency are more prone to the FQ syndrome. So it's possible that there's a magnesium deficiency here, and uh-huh. giving magnesium can be helpful. So we might certainly suggest magnesium taurate for this.
Any CoQ10 you think that might do?
Certainly coenzyme Q10, which strengthens the pumping action of the heart. Fish oil absolutely is antiarrhythmic. And there's also hawthorn that sometimes has antiarrhythmic effects. Crataegus is the botanical name.
Wow. Jean, thank you again for your question, and best of luck to your friend. Hope she feels better soon.
Yeah.
Let's see here. We've got a question from Aaron, not a J. Okay.
Okay.
Hi, Dr. H and Layla. Will there be a discussion on ears or hearing in the near future? My mother has been experiencing decreased hearing recently diagnosed as having sensory neural loss. She's 70. The doctor said there's really no cause except you're getting older. Any recommendations? Yeah. Anything else she can do?
It's interesting because we know for sure that with the eyes, another sensory organ, mm-hmm. that there is definite benefit from certain supplements like lutein and zeaxanthin mm-hmm. and zinc and some of the antioxidants and DHA from omega-3 oils.
Yeah.
So when it comes to the ears, there's actually evidence that some nutrients like, magnesium, for one, N-acetylcysteine, possibly alpha-lipoic acid, these are antioxidants as well, may have a beneficial effect on hearing. I think there's a little bit of literature on vitamin D in hearing loss.
There's also ubiquinol in hearing.
Okay.
But lots of it.
Right.
Apparently.
High-dose ubiquinol,
because
it's an energy, these are energy-dependent cells, it makes sense that they might respond to ubiquinol.
What about niacel?
Oh, very good, thank you.
Niacel
is nicotinamide riboside, and the literature is a little stronger for tinnitus mm-hmm. than it is for hearing loss, but it's a potent antioxidant.
Mm-hmm.
Let me put it this way, it's actually more akin to coenzyme Q10. It works on the respiratory chain, the Krebs cycle, the energy production cycle. And if you think about the loss of a sensory organ, it's almost like loss of energetics mm-hmm. in the cells that are very high energy cells because they're constantly processing data. And so the eyes, the retina of the eye, the inner ear, mm-hmm. where there are these tiny hair cells that vibrate mm-hmm. In the inner ear. These are nerve cells that can be damaged or senescent mm-hmm. or
drowned out by toxicity or by just an aging slowdown.
Right.
So, you know, things, I would think along the lines of things that are good for the brain might be good for the interior. Also, maybe ginkgo biloba, although ginkgo...
It'll increase the circulation.
Increase circulation, which could be beneficial. There's some literature on ginkgo biloba and hearing loss.
And tinnitus.
Meniere's.
You know, we do have one patient who reported back to us after using Niacel.
Okay.
The patient, we have a patient with Meniere's who said that that feeling of being in a cave kind of went away.
Oh, wow, okay.
That kind of feel like boxed in effect in inner hearing.
This is a new supplement. We're just gaining experience with it.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's...
She was very happy.
Yeah, no, I think that this, and it's an expensive supplement, but I think it's a candidate for providing people with protection from hearing loss.
Right, right. Yeah. Aaron,
Some of the most, they're doing a lot of research on this, particularly the military is doing a lot of research on this, because in the military, I mean, we tend to think of it as guns, but it's not always guns. It's just, you know, machinery that's very loud and jet engines that cause a lot of hearing damage. And then the VA hospitals are on the hook. You know, there's a military, you know, health system where they have a very high proportion of veterans who have hearing loss. And so they want to, in effect, reduce their expenditures by exploring nutrition as a way to prevent this. And if you look at the nutrition...
Yay for the military, yeah.
But if you look at the nutrition of the average military guy, it ain't great.
No, it's not.
They got candy machines, and they got, you know, fast food concessions at even bases in Afghanistan. You know, it's like they've got,
even their portable foods and
MREs,
everything,
the
ingredients
which
are not great.
They'll sort of keep you alive, but, you know, they may... Really, this is an opportunity to explore optimal nutrition. I mean, on a slightly different subject, there's a lot of traumatic brain injury and concussions in the military, and the use of fish oil seems to attenuate those problems.
Even on high school football fields, more concussions,
but
more head injury.
But think of how depleted in omega-3 fatty acids some of these guys are.
Yeah.
You know, when they're eating, you know, fast food, and you know how you can get fresh salmon in on deployment in Afghanistan. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably not.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Aaron, thank you for that question, and best of luck to your mother. All right.
All right, so that's all the time that we have for this part of today's Q&A with Layla. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and please join us for part two, wherein we will answer some additional questions. Give us a preview, Layla.
What can we take for arrhythmia?
All right, we already kind of delved into that a little bit.
Well, that was palpitations. Is arrhythmia the same?
Along the same lines.
Okay.
But, you know, we can comment further on that in part two.
Okay.